When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Squanderlust, a podcast about the emotional side of money, why our actions aren't always as good as our intentions, and what we can do about it. I'm your host, Martha Lawton, and today I'm talking to money coach Kathy Boddy about how she achieved financial independence without inherited wealth or connections, without grinding 24/7 and giving up all of life's pleasures, and without spending her every moment trying to time the investment markets. Welcome, Kathy. How are you doing there?
Thank you. I'm doing very well.
Good. Thank you for joining us. So, we met initially through the Initiative for Financial Wellbeing because you are a money coach. And when we got chatting, you told me how you'd reached financial independence. And I just thought it was this really wholesome, reassuring, relatable story that doesn't get told about money nearly enough. And I think wholesome, reassuring and relatable, that's, I think, what people want to hear right now.
Cool. Yeah. It's really not as complicated as you might think.
Indeed. So, first of all, should we talk a bit about what we mean by that term, financial independence? What do we actually mean?
Okay. Well, essentially, you don't need to work anymore. They call it work optional. So most of us live our lives rushing from paycheck to paycheck, and it almost doesn't occur to people that there is an alternative. So at the end of the day, once you can build up a pot of money, which gives an income in interest, dividends, whatever, that is enough for you to live on, happy days. Therefore, that money is paying your bills. You then choose how you spend your time. Now, you might want to carry on working, you might want to do voluntary work, you might want to travel, but the point is, it's in your control then. So it's really as simple as that. Once you've built up enough, you can do what you like.
Fantastic. And I think I'm not going to ask you for figures, but I think the amount that's actually necessary. We're not here for that. But the amount that's actually necessary is probably a bit lower than people think it is. You don't need
very good point.
Millions.
So, indeed, they talk about the 4% rule, and there's much debate we won't bore people with. But essentially, if you say that you take 4% of your money every year, and that's enough to live on, then potentially your money should last. It depends what your situation is. If you know you've got nice big fat pensions kicking in 5 years' time and all you need to do is survive until then, you can just say 25 grand a year, 4 years, 100 grand, and just use it up. But most of us don't want to use up the capital. We want it still to be there, or at least mostly there. So that's the idea of the 4% rule. So if you're good at maths, then you'll realise that you need 25 times your income that you want in order to be able to live on 4% of the lump, if that makes sense. I went through most of my life thinking in terms of 5%, so 20 times, but better to overestimate what you need and have a bit spare than the opposite way around, because obviously once you've stepped off the hamster wheel, if you then go, as a ex-colleague of mine once did, I haven't got enough, it's a little bit harder to get back on. So overestimate what you need by a bit and have a bit of comfort factor. Because I actually kind of finished work on the 3rd of March this year. Now, can anybody remember what was happening around about then? So I was really glad that I hadn't stepped off the year before when I kind of went, oh, I probably got just about enough. Well, I'll maybe carry on for another year, 3 days a week, just to keep fluffing it up a bit more. So that was, I was pleased about that as I saw the markets plummet down, although they have come back. But it still would have been a little bit more scary.
Yeah. So part of what you've just said is really important, is that in order to achieve this, people will need to not just put money aside in savings, they will need to invest. And there is an element of understanding investment and understanding markets. But the amount of understanding, I think people, as well as overestimating the amount of money people need, people also really overestimate the amount of knowledge about investment that they actually need. And I think that can be something that puts people off even trying to get to this point. There's an image of needing to be this kind of investment expert. Do you have any kind of thoughts on that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of the things I would say, keep it simple. I have been kind of involved in the financial world. I started off in IT. It's been a bit of a meander, to be honest. But that was in an investment management house. And I spent spent many an hour managing my investments over the years. And you know what? I think it's probably a waste of time looking back. Nowadays, you have things called index funds. So you can basically buy one fund, which then invests all across the world. It basically weights it according to the value of all the firms across the world, buys a portion of their shares. That's it. You're invested in all the great companies of the world. And some of those will go bust and others will boom. And so it all kind of just, evens itself out. So if I had my time again and that was available, which it wasn't, I'm that old, then that would be what I'd probably do. In fact, I knew the guy who actually wrote the program for the first tracker fund at L&G, now I think about it. So yes, I know it wasn't quite available back then, but it is really that simple. Trying to pick individual shares is a mug's game, basically. We like to think we're clever. So we think, oh yes, I invested in this and didn't it do well? Aren't I clever? But actually, do you know, maybe the market was going up anyway, or maybe it's going to go down again in a bit. Anything you think you know, the professionals almost certainly already know, and it's almost certainly already factored into the market. So you read the papers and the financial press and all, oh, this is happening and this is a trend, and you think, oh, I'm going to get on that. It's probably already gone. So really, that's largely a waste of time. So just keep it simple, spread your investments, put it away and forget about it. In fact, they did a thing, I forget which company it was, Prudential or somebody, and they looked at how well all their different investors had done. And they go, oh, these guys have done better than the average, done better than everybody else. What's special about them? Oh, they're dead. So people who basically hadn't touched their investments for years because they hadn't been there. So if that doesn't tell us something about not messing about with it, you're more likely to make yourself problems than you are to make it better. So, you know, have a strategy, maybe do a few side bets on interesting things, but mostly just keep it simple. But do invest, because, I mean, as we all know about inflation, it's not too bad at the moment, but I remember when it was really high and it comes and goes over the years. So if you pop your money in the bank at your 0.1% of whatever we're getting at the moment, it will be worth less when you go back to it. So if you want your money to grow, you need to invest it. Get what education you need to get yourself comfortable about that. But trust me, you really do need to. I've got an old pension from an old employer from years ago, and they've got a lovely little app, and it shows you, you know, this pot is worth £50,000. Well, that's nice. And it says, of this, £30,000 is investment growth.
Yeah.
I'm like, whoa. So more of it's growth than money I actually put in. And then, of course, with pensions, you go back and you think, well, I didn't put all of it in anyway. My employer put some in and the tax man put some in. So then we used to look, well, I put in, you know, whatever, £8,000 of that or something. So it really, really shows it. So, yes, do invest. You need to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's really, really hard slog.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's really, really important. I think people get nervous about the concept of investing, and they think there are a few kind of key myths that you hear quite a lot. And I'm sure as a money coach, you've heard this too, and you've busted a few of them, but I want to kind of unpick them a little bit here. So, or summarize at least. So there's a myth that you need to be picking individual shares and you need to know a lot, which you've soundly rebutted there, really. That, you know, playing around picking individual shares is often the least good way of actually making money on the stock market, and instead buying a small amount of shares across the market and not really paying too much attention, but just being invested across the whole market through something like an index tracker fund is a much more, it's both safer and better returns. I remember seeing a statistic, which as far as I'm aware is still true, that an index tracker fund will do at least as well as 75% of actively managed funds. So paying for an investment manager three times out of four will be worse.
Absolutely.
And you have no way of knowing which investment manager is going to be in that top, is going to be your one in four shot before it happens. Like, the past performance
you
is
think
no
it's
indicator
easy.
Exactly.
You pick who's been good. I mean, I used to be with the wonderful Woodford for many years, and I think, I took 10% out every year and invested it elsewhere very happily. But when he left Invesco, I thought, I'm not sure if it's going to continue. It's smug mode, but just luck, really. But and as people possibly know, that all went very Pete Tong. So, somebody being good for years doesn't guarantee they will continue to be. So spread it about. And also, they say the best indicator of growth is what they call asset allocation. Ooh, technical word. But so you have different market sectors like technology and, I don't know, making different things, and you have different countries in the world, geographic and that kind of thing. So different sectors will do really well certain years and not well other years. So it's being in the right sector at the right time is much more important than being in the right stock or whatever. So again, having a mix of those keeps you invested in all of them, in the ones that are doing well and the ones that are trailing a bit. So averages out. But if you fancy, like, I mean, for example, technology has been doing pretty well, so you might say, well, I want a little 10% of my specifically in technology, because that might just give a little bit of oomph. But you don't put 100% in it, even if it's done really well, because next couple of years it might all go wrong. So core invested simply.
I think that's the thing, right? So you can look at it like this. For when you're getting started out, and if you don't have a huge amount to play with, you want to put that into an index tracker, and be getting it spread across all markets. And also, if you don't want to actually have to pay attention to it, because, I mean, my personal take on a lot of this stuff is, yes, sure, you can get really interested and get really into it and be interested in researching and finding out about sectors and what's doing well and what's not, etc. But an awful lot of people actually want to spend the minimum amount of time and effort and mental effort on their financial admin that they possibly can. And setting it and forgetting it with something like an index tracker is a great way of not thinking about it, and knowing that you're going to, with that minimum of thought, still outrank 75% of investment managers.
Because again, the most important thing is to get the money in, get it in early, get it in often, and you know, that is the key thing. And I'd sort of say set it up to automatically come out of your account before you even get to see your money. So work out. I mean, I always say there's always somebody living on 10% less than you, right? So you can always live that lifestyle and get 10% of your money saved for you for your future. I know it's easier said than done. And if you've got commitments and children and what have you, and at the moment people perhaps are struggling a bit more if they're danger of their jobs. But that is the key, is to get the money away and forget about it, because otherwise it will just go. And this is the society we live in, and some see it as sinister. But at the end of the day, companies exist. They make money by selling you stuff, by basically taking your money out of your bank account into theirs. Now, hopefully you get return for it. Sometimes, you know, you buy it, you'd never wear those clothes or you whatever. But essentially, that if you don't decide what happens to your money, it will all go. So you can decide, actually, I don't want it to just all go. I want to have some left for me for that big holiday, or to buy the house, or to be financially free, but you have to decide and you have to ring fence that money. And if you just set in place and automatically doing that, and yeah, as we say, invest it, then you'll make progress. But if you don't, it's just simply the years will go by.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And that first tip about kind of really automating it, putting it in your, so that it's spread out, so that the risk is spread out, is really important. But I think the other thing about this is, you know, one of the things that's such a myth about money is this idea of timing the market, which again, you've also kind of busted here with what you were saying about the people who've passed away being the people who've actually done really, really well. And I think that's something that frightens people, is they think, oh, you know, I'm going to have to, I need to keep an eye on everything all of the time. But actually, in a way, when you look too often, you actually frighten yourself because you notice all the times when it drops. Whereas if you just put money in regularly, keep topping it up, and check less frequently, what you'll see is the growth, because you'll see the average, which tends to be growth, as opposed to seeing the short term, which is more up and down.
Yeah, there are statistics about what the from the highest high in the year to the lowest low in the year, that will be quite big and often is quite big. But the beginning to end of the year is much steadier. Poorly explained. But yeah, as you say, if you look at it all the time, you'll see, oh, aren't I doing well? Oh no, what a disaster. You know, that's just all completely irrelevant. If you're investing for 20, 30 years for financial independence, what happens in the first 10, 20 years is really not that important at all. It's just let it be. I mean, I do tend to do a little finance review at the end of the year. Probably better to do it at a random date, but that's the way I've always done it. And, you know, I've always had a kind of an idea in mind. I'd like to be maybe 10 grand ahead by the end of each year or something like that. And you look and you go, oh, yeah, you know, managed it this year. Well, not quite, or didn't quite manage to save as much because I got made redundant and didn't have any money to put in, but the investments have grown, whatever. It's just sort of you starting to see yourself moving towards where you want to be is very motivating, because you think, yeah. I mean, I had this idea once that you can live on $1,000 a month. I'm not quite sure that's true anymore. But so when I was working in IT in a job that I found really tough, no, actually in finance advice, I'd go, right, well, every £1,000 I save is a month of freedom I'm buying.
I love that.
And through the tough years, that sometimes just about got me out of bed. Now, you'll have observed that's not really an accurate target, but the point is it's a motivating one. And that is what's important, I think. You know, you look back and you go, okay, so maybe I need a rather more than that a month. But the key thing is it motivates, and that's.
And people can set their own targets. I mean, you know, what's a target for you now, and what might be a target for somebody else? It depends on so many other factors and what people want to do. But it also depends on how long, as you said, people expect to be living on this, whether they've got other things that are going to kick in. It depends on, you know, whether people expect to have to cover any kind of big expenses, or whether, for example, somebody who expects to have a mortgage completely paid off, you know, once that mortgage is gone, that's going to be a big expense that's gone, and that's going to make that financial independence a lot easier.
Yeah, which is why it's good to do some form of planning. Now, obviously, I'm a financial coach. Not many people are aware what they do, but they're a bit like financial advisors, financial planners, but we're not regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. We don't recommend products, but we can do a lot of the things that financial planners do. And one of the other things in recent years has emerged is a thing called cash flow modelling. Woo, what's that? But basically, it means you can put in your incoming and outgoings and your assets and project forward what that's going to look like. So for most people, it's several, many years of building up, and then many years, hopefully, of using that money. And you can put in things like upsizing, downsizing, possibly an inheritance, or be careful because you may not receive it. And you can start to see what your future is currently looking like. And you can say things like, I'm going to run out of money at 80. Possibly, maybe if I put in a couple of hundred quid a month more, okay, that's pushed it a bit forward, and you can actually play around with it, and that is incredibly powerful. I wish I'd had that 30 years ago. It would have been really good tool. But you can do that either with a planner, if you can find a good one, or a coach, or there's even online tools you can, you know, or a spreadsheet if you're a spreadsheet fan. But just do it. Don't just leave it to chance.
Yeah, no, that's really, really important.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I think one of the things that I wanted to kind of pick up on with you when we were talking before is it's very easy to sort of sound like to dismiss somebody talking about doing all of these things. And, you know, we've already given light to some of it and said, you know, if you can put away a percentage, the total of your income, the total amount you need, maybe less than you expect. But I think there are still some kind of lies and mental models that people have around what it takes to get to your position, that it either takes, you know, inherited wealth and connections, or it takes being an entrepreneur and that kind of that person who you hear about in the papers, who first business at 15, six-figure turnover at 19, multiple startups selling on, you know, blah 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 blah. If you're an employee, you're a mug, etc. etc. And I think, you know, again, tell us a little bit about your career path, because I think I just want to give lie to those ideas and say, because you didn't have either of those things, did you?
No, absolutely. Yeah, and the other is the property entrepreneur, and that is a way to do it, but I didn't do that. I kind of slightly missed my chance to start that, and I've always done it with shares, so I just stayed with that. But yes, no, to be fair, my grandfather did leave me £2,000, bless him, and, you know, that was actually quite handy because it allowed me to buy my first car, but I certainly not a silver spoon. Good sound start in life, father a doctor, mother trained as a teacher, and they taught me the value of money. It was more about what they used to call stewardship of money. Never heard anybody else say that, but it's like, you know, if you have money, you're responsible for making good use of it, rather than you know, having to get lots of money for status or lots of stuff. So I think that was a really good start, and I was given an allowance in my teens. I had to buy my own clothes out of, kind of thing. So very simply. And when I first went to uni, I remember my mother had wrote me a little budget of, you know, rent and books. Books? Really? Yeah. No, I did have to buy some, actually. and that kind of thing. So it was that kind of sound financial start. But that was it, really. And then we had like national savings certificates, and the idea that you could send money away and it would come back with a friend and you'd have more. I like this. So I thought I'd look into this further. But yeah, then when I started work, and like my first salary was like £12,500 a year, I thought I was absolutely in clover. But obviously living in London was terribly expensive. So what I did was I just rented a room in a shared house, which, to be fair, you know, whose turn is it to clean the bathroom? Isn't the most fun way to live, but it is considerably cheaper than renting a whole place. And again, that those kind of decisions are in your power. That's the point. Most think certain things are essential, you know, good housing and car and TV and subscriptions and clothes and so many things that are just accepted as you have to have. Well, actually, you really don't have it. You have to have, you know, food, shelter, the essentials, and then you choose how much of the rest of it you spend on that, those more luxurious things. But yes, then I gradually, met somebody in the house and we said, let's get out of here. We rented somewhere together, which was better. And so, you know, you progress and then you start to buy a house with somebody. But it's all kind of gradual. In the meantime, you know, sock away what you can, really. And so my fairly early in my career, a relative who should remain nameless kind of slightly more moral blackmailed me into doing an investment with her for £50 a month through her. It wasn't the best investment, to be fair, but it got me in the habit, which was good. So I think I just carried on from there. And then when I took out my mortgage, I managed to get an interest-only one. And this isn't for everyone, and they're harder to get now. But basically, rather than, say, tying yourself in to repay it over the years, you only pay the interest, which is a lot cheaper. And then the money you would have spent on repaying it, you invest. So I did actually, it's probably one time I actually sat down with an advisor, to be honest, and he said £250 a month invested, and we worked out how to spread the investment, different sectors, and that will get it paid off in 25 years, whatever it was. And so I did that for many years, and that's great because the investments were growing on average faster than the interest rate was. So yeah. I ended up being able to pay off a bigger chunk of the mortgage sooner. I didn't do it right to the end because at the end of the day, decisions, even for someone who's into it like me, it's not all about the numbers. It's more about how you feel. Yeah. And I know if I'd have carried on investing for another 10 years, I'd have probably had more money right now than by paying it off earlier. But having the mortgage paid off is, that feels really nice. You know, this yeah. little patch of earth, particularly through lockdown and everything, we're in our little garden going, this is ours. You know, this is our potatoes we're growing. Make your decisions based on what makes you feel happy and comfortable. And same with investment. You know, if you know that you're going to wake up in a cold sweat if the market goes down 10%, then, you know, maybe you need to ease yourself in gradually. But once you've built up a bit of tolerance to that and go, yeah, okay. One of my end of year reviews, 2008, I think, I was down 35% in the year. Oof. That was not a fun review. I can't say I enjoyed that one, but I hung in there, gripped my teeth, ignored it, got on with my life, and of course, things come back. So yes, you need to know what you can tolerate. They call it attitude to risk. There's tools again online you can get or work with someone to find out what that is. But it isn't static. You know, people often start off thinking, oh, I dip my toe in, and then mm-hmm. Maybe. And then so don't revisit it. Don't just think it's stuck forever.
And then the other thing, a couple of other points to sort of sit alongside that. So I do not have an interest-only mortgage. I understand it and I understand the concept and I understand why somebody might choose to do that. But I have a different attitude to risk. So I have a repayment mortgage. I'm much more comfortable knowing for sure that I'm paying money off that mortgage every month that we go ahead. I'm still comfortable with investing and with investing in the stock market with putting perhaps a higher percentage of my savings money towards the stock market than some people would be. I don't feel like I need to have as big a cushion of cash as some people might do before they start putting money into the stock market. And so I think it's a really good idea to get professional advice if you can get it. And yes, it's a good idea to really think about what you're comfortable with and what you're not comfortable with. And yes, it's a really good idea to actually go out and do some reading and research the facts around what the risks actually are, as opposed to what your perceived risks are. Because I think a lot of people have this real perception of the stock market being very, very risky. And they hear about things like 2008, 35% of my investment got wiped out. But so somebody I was talking to recently, a financial advisor I was talking to recently, said the news never tells you billions wiped onto stock market. They only ever tell you billions wiped off stock market. And so the perception is, because the way the news is reported, the news always says when the stock market goes down, it gets onto the front pages, and the rest of the time when it's just sort of gradually climbing up again, it's you know, kept in the financial pages, and it doesn't get into the ears of ordinary people who aren't paying attention so much.
Well, it's
to
not news,
finance.
Is it? Nobody's interested, are they? You know, people quietly making money on stock market, shock, horror, probe. No, that's not going to make any page, is it?
I think the finances are the financial news is almost more like if it bleeds, it leads than any other part of of the news, frankly.
They're all pretty much as bad, yeah.
Yeah.
Or it's like how to save a few pennies on your this, that or the other. And yeah, okay, good idea, you know, shop around for your energy supply. These are good things to do, but that gets all the attention and actually quietly building up invested wealth just not doesn't get the airtime, does it?
Yeah, and I mean, the other reason I wanted to talk to you, and I think that there's, so there's a, while we're on this topic, the other end of the stories that we get told. So we get this told these stories, the investment guru, the entrepreneur, the heir, the property magnate, you know, these are the people who make money. And we get told everybody else who's not those people, we get told anytime a pension firm goes bust, we get told anytime, you know, an employer steals people's pensions or, you know, whatever else. It's always, unless you are the investment guru, the entrepreneur, the heir, the property magnate, investing money is a problem because it'll be stolen in some way or it'll be lost in some way. And all the people like yourself who actually have been able to put money aside regularly, have made their money, nobody nicked it, you know, you're getting to enjoy the benefit of it. That's not news.
No, but I mean, like financial services compensation scheme, everybody I think knows about that now, about your 85 grand limit, and the government will make sure that you don't lose that much. But, you know, even when Northern Rock was going, you know, went bust or whatever it did, the government actually paid everybody out the whole amount. Nobody lost any money, even people who had more than that. So at that point of view, but there's now the Pension Protection Fund. I won't bore you with the technicalities, but essentially the government underwriting, you know, most of your pensions, even if your, you know, employer can't follow through on their pension commitments and stuff like this. So there's an awful lot of protections in place as well. But also mostly just, as you say, massive losses are usually a small portion for a small percentage of the time. Over the years, the markets march quietly on upwards, and you know, get on board and get some in your pockets, really.
Yeah, well, this is it. And so I wanted to bring you on because I wanted to say, here is someone, here is the story, here's the thing that just doesn't get said, because it's not if it bleeds, it leads, you know, and it's how to get rich quick by being a, you know, macho person in red braces, sneering at everybody else and talking about his options.
Well, that's one of the interesting stories in recent years is it used to be called ESG, what's it called, environmental, social and governance, used to be called ethical investing, have actually done rather well. So this idea of you can only get rich if you do somebody else down, which is another myth, again with financial coaching, it's a lot about the mindset and the negative images people have about people who have any wealth, you know, that they're bad people in some way. But you can actually invest your money, make a profit and actually support businesses that are doing good things in the world. So if that's something that concerns you, again, research it and find out and get there's various online things and apps even now, people like Nutmeg and Money Farm, if you know them, and you literally do a little questionnaire about what your attitude to risk is, how much you're putting in, and they go off and they invest it for you with the spread stuff. And when I started that with Nutmeg, I did one with the ESG fund and one with the normal fund just to compare. I am that geeky. And actually, yeah, the ESG's done very nicely. I've been the other one and I've just got that one. So, you know, money can be doing good as well as, you know, obviously some is more exploitative than others, but your money can do good and make you a return as well.
Very nice. We actually have an entire episode on investing ethically, which is, we have a financial advisor and a really interesting, innovative fintech talking about those. That is another episode of Squanderlust that people will be able to listen to.
That's good.
I agree. I think it's really important that people understand that investing doesn't have to mean that you're in some way doing somebody else out of something.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Do you have any thoughts? Because we're talking as if we're sort of talking in really broad brushstrokes, and we're talking as if people have all the time in the world, and our listeners are a broad range of ages. So I think, just to wrap up, it might be a good idea to do kind of 2-3 tips for different age groups. So a lot of what we've talked about today has been most relevant for, I guess, younger people, people just starting out. But if you give us 2-3 tips for younger people who are sort of beginning of the career, 2-3 tips for people who are in kind of middle age And then 2-3 tips for people who are kind of heading towards retirement, who might think they've left it too late. That would be really, really useful, I think, for our listeners. Homework.
Not sure I got quite that many, and I think I've given a few of them away already, but I'll see what I can do.
Well, that's fine, because it can be a recap. That's fine. So, two tips.
First thing with the youngsters.
For young people,
is,
yeah.
Young people, start now. Sorry, but the thing is, you tend to think when you're young, oh, it doesn't matter. That's ages away. And I know, like, in your 20s, being able to retire at 60 instead of 67, what difference does it make? You're old then anyway. Believe me, if you're still working in a job and you're really struggling at 62, having 5 more years of freedom will be really, really important. So even though it's a long way away, give a present to your future self and get it started, even if it's small. Now, as I say, I started on £50 a month. That's barely over a tenner a week. Easily, most of us fritter that away in, I won't say the takeaway coffee because that's a hackneyed analogy, but really little things that we just treat ourselves to and you don't think about it, but small amounts make a difference. And one of the reasons is, I don't know if you know what percentage return you'd have to get on average to double your money every 10 years. Do you know?
Off the top of my head, I don't, I'm afraid, no.
Okay, it's 7.2%.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm not saying you'll get that every year or it's completely easy, but that's more or less the average investment shares return over the years, including the investment. So actually, if the money you put in your 20s, it may not be a lot. You may only get maybe 10 grand put together. But if that then doubles once by the time you're 40, again, by the time you're 50, it doubles every 10 years, potentially, or somewhere of that order. That small amount, by the time you come to need it for your financial freedom, will have gone away and grown. It will make a difference. So if there's, I should have prepared the stats about how much less you'd have if you start 10 years later in your pension, but look it up. It's scary.
Yeah, it's that I can find readily online. We'll link to that out of show notes. What about people who are my age? What about people who are sort of more early 40s, say?
Yeah, well, start now. No.
Catch
up with the fact that you realise you didn't start early enough. None of us do. None of us do as much as we could have. The more you do. The thing is, keep reviewing it. Keep nudging it gently. Somebody was saying in a podcast, do it until it just starts to hurt a bit. And then I would say, ease off. But they may not. You know, it depends how much you hate. I mean, you know, if you're in a job that you love and you want to do it till you're 80, then, you know, this is perhaps a bit less urgent, but most of us have other things we want to do besides work, and so, you know, it depends how much discomfort, I won't say pain, you're prepared to push through, because some of these guys in FIRE, you know FIRE movement, financial independence, retire early, they're practically living on baked beans in order to retire at 45. Not for me. I want to do some other things along the way. Great for them if that's what they want, and hope when they get there that they do find other things to do, because that's the other thing. What you're going to do with the freedom? That's probably for the next age group. So, the ones in the 40s, if you haven't really engaged with it before, and that happens, you know, you're raising a family or pushing your career, what have you, then do, and as you say, educate yourself. There's fantastic podcasts. There's one called Squanderlust, I think it's particularly good. No, but people like Meaningful Money, Pete Matthew, I've listened to it. He's got so much material, and he goes, explains so much really good, sound advice, and there's just loads. Again, look them up. There's so much out there for free. It's just unbelievable. So do the work, educate yourself, and, possibly get some advice or coaching, or just sit down with a trusted friend and work out so I'm, you know, at this stage in my life, I've enjoyed a few bit of stuff in the past. Have a view where you're going, what you want your life to be, and really decide, grasp it and say, okay, yeah, it's worth, you know, a little bit less of this, that or the other to be able to do that thing that you want to do in the future. So yeah, grasp it. Don't let it just float gently by, and then you think, oh well, it's too late. It's not too late. You know, even in your 40s, you've got quite a bit of time left to get. And even if it gives you an extra year or two before you retire, or even if it gives you just a more comfortable retirement when you get there, it's all worth doing.
Absolutely. And what about people who are heading towards retirement who either might think they've left it too late, or they're thinking, well, you know, I'm not sure what I've got right now. What can they do?
Well, certainly, yes. As you say, make sure you know exactly what your situation is. You know, find out what you've got with your employer if you're working. There's a thing called auto-enrolment now. It's, again, for the younger ones as well. The employer has to put in 3% of your salary to a pension for you, and you have to put in 4%, and the government puts in another 1%. So you should be getting 8% of your salary into a pension through your working life now. You can opt out, but I wouldn't advise it unless for some desperate reason you have to. And in fact, look into what your employer offers, because most will match more contributions than that. So they'll say, well, if you put in another 5%, we'll put in another 5%. And suddenly you're getting to a really worthwhile amount. So do check into what they offer and, you know, get as much match as you possibly can. Free money. We like free money.
And really do like free money, yes.
We love a bit of free money. And from the tax man, of course.
Yeah. People don't understand how much free money you get in a pension. It's wonderful. In terms of the tax you get back again, and it's like there's so much.
Absolutely. Yeah, 25% of the final pot tax free, but also like in a situation like I'm in now, I can take my 12,500 personal allowance tax free. You know, you can earn 12,500 before you start paying tax, that personal allowance. So if I take I can take £1,000 a month out of that pension and pay no tax on that. In addition to the tax-free cash you can take, obviously, if I start earning money again, it gets more complicated. But just to bear that in mind, often there's couples where one doesn't work. So one might be carrying on working, might be earning 80 grand a year. But the non-working spouse can still be taking out that 12 and a half grand a year without paying any tax. So it's, again, worth planning, worth thinking about these things. Taking advantage of being able to take money out of a pension without paying tax on it might not seem like a big thing, but if you do that for 5 years or something, then you've managed to extract more money tax-free than just the 25% that you can have. So that's, again, something else to plan for and take advantage of. But yes, the final age group, about nearly retiring, I'd say plan what you're going to do when you retire. This isn't a financial thing particularly, but people get their head down and trying so hard to get to that money, and then they stop, and they, after a couple of weeks of whatever, they not doing very much, they go, what am I going to do now? And really, our work life gives us a lot more than just money. Purposeful activity, social interaction, all sorts of things. So just plan ahead as to how realistically you're going to spend your time and look forward to it, as well as funding it.
Yeah, I think that's super important. Coming to a kind of dead halt instead of thinking about, as you say, how are you going to spend your time? What do you actually want to do with yourself with the time that you have once you get that independence is really, really important. And I think, the last thing you want to do is to find that all of these things that we're giving structure to your day have kind of disappeared, and you don't feel like you are kind of valuable anymore. So actually having a sense of what your retirement is for, as well as the fact that you're saving for it or that it exists, is actually really, really important.
Yeah, I mean, there's different motivations, isn't it? Away from, I don't want, to have to work, I don't want to be poor, and then there's towards, which is I want to, you may maybe some charitable stuff you want to do, or you want to travel, or you want to spend time with your grandchildren, you need both those things.
Or be doing creative things, I don't know, with your time that wouldn't pay you. Absolutely. So, yeah, there's lots of good stuff that we can be going towards. I think that's really important. Kathy, you've been a joy to talk to. Thank you so much.
Okay. Indeed, yourself too.
Where can our listeners find you if they want some money coaching, or if they just want to get in touch? Where can they find you?
Okay, well, my website is very rudimentary, really, but it's www.myfinancialcoach.co.uk, all one word. So if you want to pop on there, there's an inquiry form, or email me at kathy@myfinancialcoach.co.uk. Be very happy to have a chat and see if I can help in any way.
Excellent. Amazing. Kathy, you've been a complete star. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it, Martha.
You've been listening to Squanderlust, the podcast about the emotional side of money with me, Martha Lawton.
If you've enjoyed the show, please follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love one of those nice 5-star reviews too. Or you can tell a friend about us, maybe somewhere on social media where we're at SquanderlustPod. You can also find us at SquanderlustPod.com where we put show notes, useful links and ways to support the show. Squanderlust is sponsored by Wardour Studios in Fitzrovia, London, with production by David Smith, Alicia Cunningham, Charlie Brandon King and Tom Berry. Our theme music is by Wardour Studios and graphic design by Jason Reed.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.